Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. I've said it every week. I'm saying it again, dang it. I'm not even in the important one here. But this man is, he is...
Larry Van Beek.
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek. You keep selling yourself short, my friend. I mean, come on. Like we talked last week, that odd piece of European paper says you can use the word doctor in front of your name. Well, it's good to be together with you folks. Tonight, we're going to look at kind of two different topics, and we'll kind of, we'll go through one and then jump around and come back. So first, we're going to talk about the millennium, and then we're going to jump off to views of the rapture. So we're kind of going to let Larry lead us around, and then I, as the learned yet dumb layman that I am, I'm going to ask Larry questions about what we talk about, and then we'll kind of go from there. So sound good, Larry?
Sounds very good, Steve.
Okay, so you wanted me to start off at Revelation 20, right?
Well, I did, but maybe I'll say something, and then I'll get you to read.
You bet you, sir. You so, go for it.
Steve and I decided that we would do the concept of the revelation of the revelation. Okay, let's just stop completely here.
No, come on. That was pretty good.
Was that good?
No, I like that. Yeah, let's keep going.
No. The concept of the rapture, Steve.
It's good. The people need to hear this from us.
Oh, yeah, I guess they do. Once we got to chapter 6, I felt like we had to talk about the rapture because there are Christians that believe that the church goes up to be with Jesus, goes up to heaven. And they see that at different places in the book of Revelation. So they see it, first of all, they'll see it in chapter 3, verse 10 to talk about it. And they'll say that once you get past chapter 5, everything past chapter 5, the church is already gone. So that concept of everybody being snatched away or taken up into heaven, if you've seen some of the movies, you'll see their clothes all folded nicely in a pile and they're gone and planes are crashing and because, you know, they were flown by Christians and things like that. And all of that to suggest that the Christians go to be with Jesus before the 7 years of tribulation.
Right.
So if we're going to talk about a rapture, we have to first of all talk about the millennium because there are four views of the millennium as well. And you have to be premillennial to believe in a rapture. So that's why we're going to chapter 20 and doing 1 to 3, because that is the only place that the millennium is actually mentioned. The concept of a millennium is all over the place. It's in different places. The lion laying down with the lamb and things like that, people think point to a millennium. But the actual words, the 1,000-year reign, happens in chapter 20, verse 3. So I'll get Steve, if you want to read that, and then we'll talk about it.
And we should be upfront and say that off air, I asked Larry if I could be Han in this sort of equation, but we're not talking about the Millennium Falcon. So my bad, everyone. So, okay. So
and I did not want to be Chewie. So
Yeah, nobody volunteered to be Leia either, right? So here we are. Anyway. So again, folks, I'll be reading out of the ESV version of Revelation. And starting at verse 20, and like Larry said, we'll read verses 1 through 3. And then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain. And he seized the dragon, that ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and threw him into the pit and shut it, and sealed it over him so that he might not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be released for a little while.
So, Steve, the word millennium means 1,000, and this is the place in Scripture that talks about Satan being bound for 1,000 years. Some people will call this now the 1,000-year reign of Christ. They came to life and reigned with him for 1,000 years, it says in verse number 4 as well, and talking about the resurrection, the first and the resurrection. Mm. But all of this refers to this 1,000-year reign on the earth, and that is the millennium. And there are four major views of the millennium by Christian scholars, and that is what we call amillennialism, which really means no millennium. There's okay. Post-millennialism, which means Jesus returns after the 1,000-year reign. And then there's premillennialism, which means that Jesus returns comes back for his people and then reigns on the earth for 1,000 years. Hmm. Right? So amillennialism is the main view held by, well, the Dutch Reformed people, not anybody in any church anywhere holds any particular view, but if we tied it to anyone, we would tie amillennialism to the Dutch Reformed.
Okay.
And that means that there is no millennium, that this, the idea of 1,000 years is purely symbolic.
Okay.
It's talking about Jesus' rule and reign on the earth. They'll start it when the cross came, when Jesus died on the cross, and that's when Jesus takes over and reigns on the earth. And that's really what they're talking about there. So all millennialism. And of course, okay, anything I talk about here in 2 or 3 or 5 minutes, people have written hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages on. So right, we're obviously not gonna cover the whole breadth of this topic. Yep. The other millennium view is postmillennialism, which was held by Baptist people 100 years ago or so. And it's if you get a little book called The Four Millenniums, okay, there's a Baptist lady, forgot her name. Anyway, she's the one who talks about postmillennialism. And postmillennialism kind of came with the industrial age and the feeling that the world was getting more civilized and was getting better. And the view would be that we would make the world better and better and better. And when we reached a certain level of perfection, a certain level of goodness, if you want to say,
okay,
on the earth, then Jesus would just come back because we had prepared the earth for him. Right. Since you know, the 1920s, 1930s, very few people have followed this kind of a view at all. Some still do, and some still support it, but it's not a very strong one out there. Most North American Christians would then be premillennial. They would believe that there'd be, you know, 7 years and then Jesus would return and he would reign for 1,000 years after that. And that's the period when there's all kinds of discussions. You know, do people actually die during that period? Does everybody serve the Lord during that period? Can you not serve Jesus if he's ruling and reigning on the earth? Is the lion laying down with the lamb? Is there perfection upon the earth? Like all of these concepts of, you know, what is going on the earth? The premillennialists, if you're then break into two groups as well, and it's dispensational premillennialism, which is very much a part of this whole dispensational futurist, who see the 1,000 years being a literal 1,000-year reign of Christ on the earth. And then they see that Israel is quite separate from the church. They will see the church going up in the rapture, and you know that Israel is left on the earth, and then they turn to God and they turn to Christ after the rapture. And so that's dispensational premillennialism again. Taking the book of Revelation very literally and seeing this, the 7 years and then the 1,000-year reign as it being a very literal time. After the 1,000-year reign, Jesus reigns for 1,000 years, then Satan is loosed for a very short time, and then God crushes Satan, and that's the end of time when we're all, right, depending on what you want to say, we're all in heaven, we're all in the New Jerusalem, you know, there's different concepts of what actually happens after that 1,000 years. Mm. So then there's also classic premillennialism. And classic premillennialism, those are the guys that they still see Jesus returning and then there being 1,000-year reign, but they don't think the 1,000 years has to be a literal 1,000 years. It can just be a long period of time. Like the word 1,000 is used quite often in the book of Revelation, the thousands and thousands of angels, you know, and then this 1,000 years. They also see that the church in Israel can be, the language for Israel can be used of the church, that there's not a huge distinction between the two. So if you're going to look at Revelation and you're going to think about a rapture, then you have to be premillennial to think that there's a rapture. Right. If you're postmillennial or amillennial, then a rapture isn't even a concept. That's kind of how that goes, Steve.
Yeah. Now, Larry, I mean, I don't know why this twig, but, you know, the crazy way our brains work, maybe. But I remember during even, you know, like during the George W. Bush era, that people that it was rumored that there was kind of this sort of movement of people around him that almost thought they needed to set events in motion to kind of cause this millennium to happen. Is that kind of like a common view? Is that something weird that you...
That's fairly new to me. I don't recall that. There has been a very strong movement in the States for all of the last century that said that we need to support Israel. Hmm. That the United States was going to support Israel rather than Palestine, rather than Israel's enemies. They would support Israel. And a big part of that had to do, not all of it, not every piece of it, but a big part of it had to do with this view that God has a plan for Israel, and that Israel's the apple of God's eye, and that therefore you must support Israel. So there was a bit of a biblical background to that. Mm-hmm. And so if you were doing stuff to support Israel, and you know, 1948, they get back their right. country.
Their homeland, yeah.
Their homeland. And, you know, some would say, well, but that wasn't spiritual Israel. That was just national Israel. So that means nothing. But others would say, no, there's quite an important prophetic event that happened then, right?
I think I was just fascinated by the fact that, you know, in the West or North America, we had that one view of the millennium. And I wondered how much that was kind of colored by a strictly American view of Revelation in some ways, you know, the new Israel, all those types of things kind of went into that, I wondered.
Yeah, and most of the stuff that, you know, when you're talking about dispensationalism and all that, that specifically, that is a North American view. Mm. It's, and you know, anything that happens in the United States kind of permeates through the rest of the world.
Right, right.
And so it's not strictly North American, but it very much is. Mm-hmm. From North America, it's kind of the birthplace.
Right.
If that's quite right, that might be not 100%, but we're getting in the right ballpark there.
Yeah. I'm sorry for that aside. It just came to...
No, it's okay. So anyway, the idea then of a rapture. So the church, or many, many groups of Christians believe that there's going to be a rapture before these massive events that happen on the earth, right? And depending on which church group you're a part of or which leaning you have, they see the rapture happening in three places in the Bible or in the book of Revelation. They see it happening in at 3:10, as we were saying, just before chapter 6. Right. That's called the pre-trib rapture, guys. Or that's not the pre-trib rapture, guys, the pre-trib rapture. Then, and we can read that first. Let's do that one first.
Do you want me to read just 3:10, or do you want me to kind of expand out, or is that good?
Yeah, maybe just start at 10 there.
Okay, we'll do. Okay, so folks, Revelation 3, starting at verse 10. Because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world, to try those who dwell on the earth.
And 11?
Sure. And 11 says, I am coming soon. Hold fast to what you have so that no one may seize your crown.
And then 12.
Sure, you betcha. Once more. we're having a good time. The one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. He shall never go out of it, and I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down from my God out of heaven, and my own new name.
So this is the book of, this is the Church of Philadelphia. Remember, there were two churches that Jesus doesn't say anything bad about. One was Smyrna, which we talked about before, and the other was Philadelphia. And Philadelphia was also a struggling church. And the promise here is, you know, you're where this, he talks about the synagogue of Satan with these guys as well. Remember that those, they were the Jewish people that were turning Christians over to the Romans. Right. And he said, but because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that's coming on the whole world. And pre-trib rapture people, they believe that that this is a promise to Philadelphia that that church is going to be taken up in a rapture. Hmm. So the idea of a rapture is a seizing away, a seizing up or a seizing away. And some people say, well, the word rapture is not used in Scripture. And they're right. The word rapture is not, but the concept is there. And for those that, that don't believe the possibility of a rapture, we always take them, we take them to Enoch, who walked with God and was not, for God took him. Yeah. And we take them to Elijah, who went up in a cloud, and Elisha stood there and watched him go. And he went up in the chariot in the cloud.
Right, right.
And that was very much a rapture as well. You could do the transfiguration and the taking away of Jesus as well, but we usually don't do that one.
Right, Jesus right.
holds a special place in this whole thing. But we do yeah. point to those two and say, neither of them died. They both went to be with God. And so the concept of a rapture is very real. And the church will look at this thing of Philadelphia and they'll say, so when you get to chapter 6 and the trouble starts to come on the earth, the church is already gone. And there's a place that says, I will remove my restrainer. People take you to Thessalonians for that. And they talk about when the restrainer is removed. Mm-hmm. And some people think the restrainer is either the Holy Spirit is removed, or they just point to the church and they say the church is removed. So the idea of a rapture is very much that the church goes up to be with Jesus, and then God starts pouring his wrath upon the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So the one view of the rapture is what we call pre-trib rapture. And that's where we go from 3 verse 10. Now, not all Christians see a rapture there. Some see it in chapter 11.
Okay. Sure. And where would you like me to read out of here, bud?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here, but when we get to chapter 11, we can talk about the two witnesses and the two olive trees. Keep going down.
You betcha.
Yeah, just a little further. There we go. So, you just had it there on verse 11 there.
Oh,
sorry, Steve.
No, that's okay.
There we go. If you want to read that, you can read from 10 if you want.
You betcha. All right, folks.
I'll read from 9, just because it's kind of cool.
Okay, you bet. Revelation 11, starting at verse 9, and we'll read all the way to 13?
13.
Maybe? That sound good?
Yes.
For 3.5 days, some from the peoples and tribes and languages and nations will gaze at their dead bodies and refuse to let them be placed in a tomb. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them and make merry and exchange presents, because these two prophets had been a torment to those who dwell on the earth. But after the 3.5 days, a breath of life from God entered them, and they stood up on their feet, and a greater fear fell on those who saw them. And then they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. And they went up to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies watched them. And at that hour, there was a great earthquake, and a tenth of the city fell. 7,000 people were killed in the earthquake, and the rest were terrified and gave glory to the God of heaven.
So you can see here why some people see a rapture. Now, these two witnesses that they talk about, some say that they are representative of Israel and the church. So Israel and the church are the two witnesses, just like the 24 elders represent, you know, possibly the church and Israel as well. Some say that, no, that's not them, that these people are actually Moses and Elijah, because the plagues resemble the plagues of Moses and Elijah. Others say, no, it's Enoch and Elijah, because as we said, those are the two guys who went to heaven and didn't die. So right. They think that they're them. But when you get to verse number 11, it says, but after 3.5 days, which is a limited period of time, all the way through the book of Revelation, 3.5, the breath of life from God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and fear fell on those. And then verse number 12, then they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. And they went up to heaven in a cloud as their enemies watched. And some people think that that's the rapture there, that the church, God says, come up here, and then the church goes. And okay. They go to be with heaven, or go to be with heaven. They go to God, to be with God in heaven while their enemies look on. And I got to tell you, Steve, like as I told you before, I don't see a rapture in Revelation, and that's only because I see Christians all the way through this book. And if you see a rapture, then where I'm seeing Christians all the way through this book, then you're going to see what we're going to call tribulation saints.
Okay.
So there are people serving God all the way through the book of Revelation. And even though I see it as the church, the same church that we're a part of, right. Some say, no, it can't be that. It has to be people that come to Christ after the rapture, and therefore they're tribulation saints. But if you look here, when he says in a loud voice, come up here, and they go to heaven in a cloud, man, that sounds like a rapture to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my old teacher in when I was in Bible college, he was a mid-trib. This is called mid-trib view, because you're 3.5 years into the tribulation. And this is where he saw the rapture. I don't see a rapture, but if I did, not a bad place to see it. Now, the mid-trib people call themselves pre-trib. It's kind of complex, doesn't it? The mid-trib people call themselves pre-trib because they say that the church is actually on the earth for the first 3.5 years. And then the second 3.5 years is the Great Tribulation. Hmm. And this is where, in the Great Tribulation, is where the church is gone and God is pouring his wrath upon the people of the earth.
Yeah.
And so we're being persecuted ourselves all the way through the first 3.5 years. And then it's the rest of them. So this is the mid-tribulation rapture.
Yeah.
Right.
And the mid-trib guys would also take that as a literal 3.5 years too, right? Is that right? Or would that be symbolic?
Very much so. Yeah. That's still a dispensational view.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And so it's still very literal. It's there's all kinds of stuff happening on the earth. There's all kinds of stuff because we're at the seventh trumpet now. So
right.
The last 3.5 years are bolts, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the one place. The other place that it's very similar, but if you go a little bit further ahead, to chapter 14, around verse 6-ish.
Okay.
And then we get just a little different view of the rapture here as well.
Okay. Do I read 6 and 7?
I'm doing the right one, Bonnie reads 6, yeah.
Okay, cool. And then I saw another angel flying directly overhead with an eternal gospel to proclaim to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, and tribe, and language, and people. And he said with a loud voice, fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth, and the heaven and earth, the sea, and the springs of water.
Yeah. So in this case, he's just seen the 144,000, right? In the beginning of chapter 14, he's talking about they're the ones who they're the redeemed from the earth. But then in verse number 6, he says, I saw another angel flying directly overhead with the eternal gospel to proclaim. And do you remember in Matthew, it says that the gospel will be proclaimed in all the earth, and then I will return. Then the end will come, right?
Right.
And there are many Christians that feel that when everyone on earth has heard the gospel, then the end can come. And so with this angel proclaiming the gospel to every nation, tribe, language, and people, and then give glory to God for his hour of judgment has come, they think that then that is where the church goes up, right? And then after this, you have the second angel saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and then a third angel after that. And so then you have the final judgments on the earth after that. But they'll see this as a place for a rapture.
Okay.
So there are three major places that you see a rapture in this book, and that's pre-trib, just before chapter 6, the comment is in 3:10. Mid-trib, it was in 11, and here again in 14. And then, of course, George Eldon Ladd was the first guy that we used to talk about saying this. There may have been others, but Ladd talked about this in his theology book. And George saw the rapture at the end of the book of Revelation.
Hmm.
So he thinks that the Christians are going to go right through, and he takes it that the church will be very much like the Israelites in the land of Goshen. You remember when the Israelites were in the land of Goshen, and the plagues, Moses was doing the plagues, and the plagues were falling upon everyone except those that lived in the land of Goshen. They were protected from it. And Ladd would say, yeah, the Christians are there through all of the stuff that happens, but God protects them as he did the Christians. And then he points to the Matthew verse where Jesus says, "Lo, I am with you to the end of the age."
Right.
And George Eldon Ladd would say that God is with us to the end of the age. And that's why we can actually survive all of these things that happen on the earth. And he would say, why wouldn't we be there, right? And then he would use the term parousia for rapture. And parousia is quite common. And when the Ephesians went out and saw Paul, and they brought him back into Ephesus with them, that was the parousia. So the going out and the meeting and the coming back. So he thinks at the end of this age, just before Jesus returns, he's going to come down and the Christians are going to meet him. And then we're all going to go up and be with him. And then we're all going to come, you know, we're all going to come and rule and reign with him for 1,000 years after that, for the bigger part of the party.
Yeah.
And you were saying something to me just before we started the podcast here. What were you saying about your friends from around the world?
Oh, right. Sorry. And later I'll actually remember what I was talking about. No, I was saying to Larry, that in talking with some of the other folks that have kind of been involved in like the third world churches, that often in the third world, they're all post millennials because they already think they're in that time of tribulation and suffering. They've already hit that, that great suffering. So, I mean, you talk to many folks in the third world and they're apparently they'd come back and say, well, yeah, of course we're post-millennial because...
Or post-tribulational.
Post-tribulation, sorry. That's what I meant. Post-tribulation because, we're already in it, gang. You know, there is already wars and famine and disease and everything that's already being poured out on the earth. It just happens to be not in North America.
Yeah, and actually in the beginning it would even fit anyway because, when he's saying, the wheat, a thing of wheat for a day's wage or three things of barley, and don't touch the oil and the wine. The suggestion is at the beginning, the rich people were making it through, and it was the poor that were suffering first. So that kind of fits their thing a little bit too.
Okay. Okay.
So now, again, as you've heard me say, I don't see a rapture only because I see Christians all the way through this. But I'll tell you, the rapture stuff has the best stuff anyway. Like, I saw a t-shirt once that said, "When I get raptured, you can have this t-shirt." You know, I kind of like that.
That's not bad.
And as both you and I say, Steve, whether I see a rapture or not, if there is one, I want to go.
I don't want to die with my... Yeah. God
leaves us behind because left behind. Well, there is that. But I don't think he leaves us behind just because we don't take the right view of the rapture. You
know? That's right. I'll take Billy and Susie, but not you, Larry. Oh crap!
Though having said that, I was watching back when Jimmy Swaggart was still popular. I was watching one of his shows when I was in the hospital. And it was actually these 12 guys sitting around a table, and they were scholars, and they were talking about the rapture, and they were what we call partial trib rapturous. And at first it sounds silly, but it wasn't too bad. They believe that the good Christians get to go in the rapture, and the bad Christians have to stay for the tribulation. And I, at first I thought it was kind of stupid, but, and I disagree with them, but they would take that all from the idea of he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes, you know, I will let you sit at my right hand, or I will let you, you know, eat of the tree, or I will let you, you know, and he would have had all these different promises if you were in chapter 2 and 3, and their whole point was that you have to hear the word of God and you have to be an overcoming Christian or else you just don't get to go in the rapture. And I don't agree with them, but it's, you know, it's as good as a lot of the stuff we say in the book of Revelation. And if it gets people to live better lives, now this was before he ran into his issues. And if it gets them to live better lives, you know, So anyway, that's called Cardinal.
Is it all right if I upload, you know, as a simple layman, it's almost like an evangelical purgatory kind of situation, right?
Like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, not that maybe it's not, that's not a great equation there that I've just drawn up. But anyway, it's just kind of, it was kind of a laughable thing to think of. Like, hey, yeah, that looks like it's almost purgatory at that point. You guys are good.
You got to, in a sense, you got to work your way into heaven.
Yeah, and you've got to last through the tribulation before you're allowed to go. Yeah.
Although there are a number of places here where he says, you know, you have to patiently endure. So
yeah,
you know, so they're not that far off.
Yeah.
But because I see Christians all the way through anyway, and the final view, the fifth view of the rapture, is what we call pan-trib.
Okay.
And that's what some people say. Well, it's all going to pan out in the end. And I just can't follow any of this rapture stuff, so I'm not even going to worry about it. Actually, pan is the Greek word all. Yeah. So it says that all the views have some merit, and you can do it that way. Now, my mother-in-law was straight pre-trib rapture. And actually to a point where she said, I don't care what happens in Revelation, because I'm going to be gone before that happens anyway. And oddly enough, if you're a strict pre-trib guy, then, or girl, then you're gonna say, well, I'm gonna be gone for this whole thing anyway, so it doesn't have an effect on me. However, it does, because this book is about the sovereignty and the authority of God, and about the necessity for salvation too.
Right.
So there is other stuff in there as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, Steve, those are the four views of the millennium, and then again the three major views and the two minor views of the rapture as well.
Yeah.
So lots of Christians are going to see a rapture happening somewhere in this book, and you know, packing up their clothes and getting to be with Jesus until the end of the book or until the millennium. And for some of us, we're not seeing it, but hoping for it just the same.
That's right. We'll be pleasantly surprised if it happens.
Very pleasantly surprised. Yeah. Nobody wants to go through this stuff.
So. Yeah, that's right.
Somebody once said of Thessalonians, comfort each other with these words, and they said, if we're not going to get out of the tribulation, then what comfort is there in those words?
Yeah.
But don't forget that he was talking to a church that was facing imminent death.
Yeah.
They need a comfort too.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, because if you think many of these same churches that John is speaking to, you know, like Smyrna is in that spot, right? Philadelphia could have been in that spot of things are pretty, pretty bleak. And, you know, the thought of being able to escape that suffering in some ways was very attractive, but also, you know, he's appealing to them. You are going to suffer. You'll keep suffering. So it's, like you said, it's easy to see how four views develop out of that quite quickly.
Oh, yeah, and you can see Christians all through the different points in the ages. Second World War, just very much thinking they were in the middle of the tribulation.
Right.
You know, the Orthodox ministers, they looked at Napoleon and thought he was the Antichrist, and thought this was tribulation coming upon them. Mm. So there have been many times in history when people have looked out and said, this has got to be it.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, Art, thanks so much for doing that overview for us. Folks, regardless of what y'all think, no, I'm just joking. I found it fascinating. And I'm in that spot where, you know, again, I come out of a pre-trib denomination. Personally, I'm not all that concerned with it, to be honest with you. It's not something I spend a lot of time thinking about, even though I'm very fascinated with Revelation. It's just not something that I pour a lot of mental energy into. So, but it was, that was fascinating, Larry. Folks, as always, you know, Larry and I are just blessed that, and tickled pink that you even want to listen to this stuff. And, we're thankful that you just enjoy a conversation between us. And probably even if you didn't listen to it, we'd still be having this conversation somewhere. We just happen to record them. That's all. You can find this and all of our other, podcast episodes are on apocalary.ca. You can just go to that website and find them there. And we're still working on iTunes. I'll get it up and happening someday, folks. That's not anyone else's fault but my own. But we'll get that happening, and then you can start listening on to your iDevices and your fancy Android phones and all those kind of things. Who doesn't want to listen to the Apocalary on an iPhone 10, right? Who doesn't want to listen to it on there? On a $1,000 phone, you should listen to a $1,000 podcast. So, anyway, thanks so much for joining us, and until next time, I'll, we'll see you later.